Evening, everybody. I'm Tom. I'm a grateful alcoholic. And I'm actually live in Las Vegas, and I commute to work to Universal Studios, and so I got a home group in Vegas, and I got a home group in LA, and so I do a lot of freeway flying. So it was a pleasure and honor to be here. I want to thank Joe for having me out here this evening with you folks, and the gift basket was awesome, and you guys are just a terrific group. I have a lot of history here in this town. Back in the early 80s, I was dating a gal from Hanford, and we rented a place up at Shaver Lake for a winter. Just had a gorgeous time, did a lot of skiing and stuff. And then about 15 years ago, they were building Chachansi Gold up here. And I came in and I stayed with Matt Green over here in Clovis, and I was flying up and down the freeway there, you know, every day to work. We worked 7 days a week, 12-hour days for about 4 months, and I was really active in Clovis and also over here in Fresno. And he's going to adjust me here a little bit. But I absolutely love the sobriety here in Fresno. Grace Lee Whitney was a real good friend of mine. I knew her from down south. So I'm going to tell you about my sobriety later, but to start off, you know, my sobriety date is June 25th, 1984, and for that I'll be forever grateful. And yeah, I got sober before some of you were born. I wasn't always this old, but I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't start off wanting to be an alcoholic. I started off, I was raised here in Southern California. I was born, in Linwood area, but was pretty much raised in Costa Mesa, and pretty normal childhood. Folks got divorced when I was real young, got remarried, had a wonderful stepfather. I have no issues in that department either. But I can tell you that the first time I got invited to an upper class party was the first time we were going to go out drinking. Prior to that, you know, we'd had to drink here for New Year's or something like that. It was always around the house, but not a big deal. But this night, we're going out drinking. And it was a typical high school party. You know, they had all the guys on the wall on the right. The girls were on the wall on the left. I floated into that keg and got my beer and went back to my wall. By the third beer, I was the bartender. And I was pouring one for you and one for me. And I absolutely love the effect produced by alcohol. Growing up, I had a lot of fears. I was afraid of all them tough football players. I was afraid to talk to girls. By the end of that third drink, I was not afraid of nothing. Big tough guys became my best friends. I was kissing on the girls, and I was to do that night everything I was going to do for the next 15 years of my drinking. I fell down, I threw up, and I was thrown out. And then next morning, I had my swim workout, and I remember going to you know, getting in the pool, and I got like three lines in my lane, you know, and I'm doing these flip turns. I kept rolling. I'm missing the wall and all this stuff, and my head's just exploding, and I'm like, God, get me through this, and I will never do this again. And we took our showers. We're getting dressed. We're just about ready to leave, and a couple guys come right and said, Tom, we saw you at the party last night. You were really funny. We're going to another party tonight. You want to come? I said, sure, just like that. And I was to do that for the next 15 years of my drinking. You know, I swore it off thousands of times. You know, at the time going up, I had, obsessed with a lot of things. You know, I remember I started working at a young age. I was like 10, started shining shoes, but I had a Social Security card at 13. I was working at a pie shop. And I'm going down to the beach on my days off, and all the girls are hanging around that lifeguard, bringing him lunch and shit. And so I'm like, hey, now that's a job I want to have, you know. And so the next summer, I was a junior lifeguard, then a lifeguard. And I was up there snow skiing, too, in the winters in high school. And, you know, all of a sudden some guy would ski up to the front of the line with a little red cross on his back and yell single, and him and some girl would hop in the chair and be going up the lift, and I'd be back there in line, you know. I'm going, no, that's the job I want to have. Became a ski patrolman. And then the instructors were making more money, so I became that. Started teaching skiing and stuff. And I'm going to college and stuff like this, and I'm not there. You know, I went from Orange Coast, pretty much got away from a lot of the other regular sports and started getting into the skiing a lot more, a lot better partying and stuff. But I had one thing that I realized that I transferred from Orange Coast up to USC and studying business, and some of the first signs of alcoholism start showing up. And one of the first signs is that you develop this immense capacity to outdrink all the people around you. Yeah, and you know, I'm in these chugging contests and everything, but I'm going out drinking with these guys, and I've had three or four six-packs, and these guys are on their third or fourth drink, and they're falling down on themselves. And they're like, Tom, can you drive? And I said, drive? I can race. I'm ready for the Indianapolis 500. You know, I'm ready to. Now they're starting to lose control, and I'm feeling in control. And I don't know what they're doing, but I'll tell you what. We had these chugging contests, and I'm out drinking the front line of the USC football team at that time. Guys like Bill Bain and Mike Hancock, these are huge guys. They're like 270, you know, 6'4", and I'm like 5'10", 150 pounds back then. But that's one of the first signs that you develop this that hollow leg, they say. You can outdrink something. It also starts giving you something else, too. If you start drinking the way I was drinking, you start getting an opinion. And I was starting to think I was a little bit smarter, unique, and different than the rest of them, especially some of these professors. And I remember in my senior year, I had six classes to graduate, and I walked up, I opened the door of this class, and I had this professor the semester before, and I didn't like him then. And I certainly didn't like him in that moment. And I shut that door and I turned around and I walked away from college with less than six classes to graduate. And my parents were pissed. And people are saying stuff to me like saying, Tom, see the world, join the Navy. I'm like, not. Locked up on a boat with a bunch of guys for 9 months? I don't think so. And a couple gals I was dating where were saying, hey, Tom, why don't you be a flight attendant? You'd have a lot of fun. And this is back in 1976, folks. This is back in the good old days. Back then, sex was safe and marijuana and cocaine were non-habit forming. my time has changed. And so I started interviewing with a couple airlines, and I got picked up by TWA. And like I said, this is the good old days. This is 1976. This is back with the start of the disco days with Donna Summers, the Bee Gees. And you're looking at one of the original disco ducks. And it was a great job. It was a lot of fun. I got paid to hop on an aircraft, serve a bunch of meals and a few cocktails, and dance the night away. And I was traveling coast to coast, and I knew the best discos all the way from Seattle down to Florida and from Maine to San Diego and everything in between. And like I said, it was a magical time, and it was working. We were having a lot of fun. It was, I was drinking to have fun. The only problem is I had something unbeknownst to me, which is alcoholism, which is progressive and terminal, you know. And in the beginning, I was just drinking to have fun. And then I started having problems in life and stuff with relationships and work and all this stuff, and I started drinking at things, you know. And then all of a sudden, my mother came down with cancer when I was about 24, and, I remember taking a leave of absence and moving back home, you know, to do the right thing, you know, with my folks, and I got a nice job. And alcoholism is kind of like water, we kind of seek our own level. All the alcoholics tend to gravitate to each other. The book talks about out drinking your friends and stuff. It says that our way of life seems the only normal one. That's because we start out drinking at people. People who don't drink like us don't want us around. But I only drank around people who drank like me because I outgrew the other ones. You know, in the beginning, I was, like I said, I was drinking to have fun, and I started drinking at problems. You know, what's funny, at 16, when you fall down, you throw up, and it's really cute, but when you're at, 25 and 26, it's not so funny, especially if somebody just bought a new house and has brand new carpet there. They don't invite you back. But like I said, my mom had come down with cancer, and I'd taken a leave, and I moved back to Southern California, and I got a job in sales and had a company car and expense account. And of course, being the alcoholic I was, I found the other alcoholic in the group, and that was our sales trainer. And so at the end of the day, we would all go for happy hour. And this is back when they put out them big hors d'oeuvre spreads, you know. They would have free hors d'oeuvres, you know, two-for-one specials. And so we would go out with the whole group. And after about 2 or 3 hours, you know, everybody else is getting up and going home. And he and I, we'd get up and leave with him, too. But we'd go down to the next bar, you know. And after a couple hours there, he'd get up and go home to his wife and kids and stuff. And I'd go down to the next bar. I'm going down to the little toilet around the corner that you can smell a block away. And we end up locking the door with a bartender and help him clean up, you know, through the rest of the night. And I was doing that. And what the truth of the matter was, I was doing what they call relief drinking. I couldn't bear to go home and watch my mom deteriorate in front of my eyes. And I was drinking myself into oblivion every single night. But before she passed away, she sat me down and said, I want to talk about some stuff. And one of the things is, she says, you have alcoholism in your blood. It turns out I had two uncles that were alcoholic, and one left a wife and 8 kids who was never seen again. Another one was a merchant marine who never drew a sober breath in a port. And I had a grandfather who died of cirrhosis of the liver. And she said, and you're showing all the signs. Not a couple of them, not a few, but all the signs, you know. And so, you know, after she passed away, I can tell you I was never more enabled in my life, you know. everywhere I went, you know, the guys, the poor guy lost his mom, they're buying me drinks and stuff. And after that, I end up going back into the airlines, and I'm traveling around, and so I started watching my drinking. And I can tell you, every time I would go out and try to control my drinking, there was absolutely no fun. And anytime I was having a lot of fun, there was absolutely no control. And so what happens is I end up going along on this pace for a little while, and then I had to start to have more problems at work. One time a supervisor came up and approached me to about, and he wanted to talk about something. I said, okay, and we're sitting there and he's mumbling around and I'm going, it's really hard to admit if you have a problem with it. And I go, what, alcohol? I said, yeah. I said, I got a problem with that. And he's like, he was so shocked because there's supposed to be a little bit of denial in it. And I'm thinking, 9 out of 10 times I was fine, but that 10th time was starting to kill me. So he said, hey, great. So I went down to see the special health service people and they gave me one of those 20 questions there. And of course, I end up passing with flying colors. I think I got like 18 out of, for example, I missed two of them. One of them I still remember. It says, do you drink in the morning? Well, no. I mean, I have, but I don't. You know, so that was a no. You know, so that was one of my no's. And she looks at this thing, her eyes are popping out. Going, my God, you're an alcoholic. And I'm going, what? I said, screw you, but a little stronger words. But I said, I answered these questions exactly the way you want me to. What are you talking about? And she said, well, there's a test. And you can go out and you have to go out and have 2 or 3 drinks. You have to make a choice, 2 or 3, and then you do this. And you have to do it every day. And then you have to do it. And if you can do that, then, you know, you're not alcoholic. I said, well, I don't drink every day. They said, oh, we'll try. You know, I said, oh, okay, you know, so I'm going along, and then they said, what would you like to have, 2 or 3? I said, well, I'll have 3. They said, we thought so. Put that in there. And I'm going along and stuff like this, and I'm taking this test, and I'm doing pretty good, and I forgot to ask a very strategic question before I left there, and that was, how long do you want me to do this? And I'm about a month into this thing, and they said, oh, a year. And I'm like, catch was you couldn't save them up and have them on Friday. You had to have just the 3. And they weren't them tall Fosters either, them little 12-ounce cans or less. You know, they're and I was like, man, so I went on about another 3 or 4 weeks, and I went into a blackout on, I think it was election day. I really didn't care for who won or something. I don't know. But so I ended up having my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 26 years old, and I checked into one of them tune-up centers, you know. Went down in Orange County, care unit thing, and it was really nice there, and they were talking about all this stuff and going to the meetings, and I really enjoyed that, and I just love the sobriety thing, and so I'm going to meet and see, but I'm not one of those alcoholic andas. I'm a real alcoholic, and to me what that meant is I could continue to smoke pot and snort cocaine, but only on special occasions like Tuesday, you know, and let me tell you, you snort a couple lines of coke, you go to an AA meeting, they ask for a burning desire, your hand goes up. Let me tell you how wonderful the sobriety is. And they're like, you know, nothing for the neck up, please, you know. And, you know, they stopped calling on me. And so I stopped going, and I had another major catastrophe in my life. I got stood up on a date, and I did exactly what it said to do in the big book. I stepped in the nearest bar, and I tried some controlled drinking. Had a wonderful, meaningful overnight relationship, and was sitting there going, ha, now you know, because, see, I really appreciate everything you said, but see, my case was just a little bit different, therefore, everything you said didn't apply. And I spent the next 3 years of sheer hell fulfilling chapter 3 in the big book, unbeknownst to me, because I hadn't read the book, hadn't got a sponsor, and it's really tough to work any steps if you don't do that. So here I am doing all this stuff, and you know, I was trying to have fun, and I had this hell of foot of AA and a belly foot of booze and all this stuff, and things were getting worse, and I was having more problems at work and whatever. And you guys taught me some good stuff. You taught me about that hair on the dog and, you know, to stop the shakes and stuff in the morning. And, you know, what happened was is I just kept drinking and trying to do this, and I was trying to control and enjoy, and there wasn't any. And in the beginning, like I said, I was drinking to have fun. Then I was starting to drink at problems. And for me, you know, at the end of it, it was getting really bad. And what happened was, is like, I'd go out to 2, 3 in the morning drinking, and one more time slamming that fist on the bar. How did I do this again, you know? swearing it off without the solemn oaths and stuff. Every time I was showing up for work, we had problems. There were short liquor or money or both. And so I applied for the job as a service manager who did the inventory work so we didn't have any more problems. And one of the problems is I prefer working them later in the afternoon flights. I'm really good on the red eyes, you know. I resemble that. But the service manager thing, I didn't have my choice. I had to start getting these early morning flights. The problem is that the service manager has to pour coffee in first class. And then the silver trays and the china cups back then, and you're like shaking like this. Oh, would you like some coffee? And they're like, over the aisle here, please, thank you. Yeah. And I'm like, what's shaking more, me or the plane? And we were still parked at the gate. And so I'd have to go hit 3 or 4 vodkas to calm my nerves so I could get normal to go to work. And I love the old Indian adage where it says, the man takes a drink, then the drink takes a drink, then the drink takes the man. And that was my story. At the end of my drinking, I'm not drinking to have fun anymore. I'm not drinking at problems. I'm drinking because I've been drinking. And little did I know what was what or who was who. And not like some of you folks, I got sober on a New Year's resolution, and like I said, my sobriety date's June 25th. 19. I was getting around to it, you know, and God, I'd get a week, and I get this, and I'm going to these meetings, and I'm trying to go, you know, I'm trying to do this, and I'm going to the meeting, and for some reason, I was hitting this Tuesday night meeting really pretty regularly, and finally, the girl walks over and says, do you have a home group? And I said, no. And they said, would you like this to be your home group? I said, yeah, that'd be very nice. And they said, when's your sobriety date? And I said, today. And she put down her pen and picked up a pencil and wrote it in there. That's cold. This woman had a lot of insight and judgment, let me tell you. And that was not my sobriety date. But, you know, I truly believe what drove me to my knees was that emptiness and loneliness inside that a few know. You know, I was in a room full of 1,000 people, and I was all alone. You know, I knew I was destined for something in life, but that wasn't it. You know, and I knew I was killing myself. So one more time, I ended up checking myself into another tune-up center, one of the care units out there in St. Louis, Missouri. I transferred over there when I got that job as a service manager. So I'm checked in over here, And I did the 30 days inside that treatment thing. It was funny because all I wanted to do was go out to meetings, you know, and they wanted me to sit in these meetings of, you know, family dynamics of substance abuse and a few other things. I'm like, hey, I'm a single guy, you know. My family has no problems with drinking. They have a problem with my drinking, but not their, you know. And what ended up happening was I just did that. And they said, hit 90 meetings in 90 days and bring the body and the mind to follow and all that stuff. And I got there, and I remember checking out, and I had this German counselor, and she goes, okay, so how many meetings do you plan on going to? And I said, a week? And I said, 7. And she goes, oh, be realistic. Okay, 14 to 21. And she didn't think I was funny, but that's what I ended up hitting. I averaged probably any time I wasn't at work or doing something else, I was in a meeting. They said, you know, if it wasn't an excuse not to go drinking, don't use it as an excuse not to go to a meeting. Now, when I was new, I was great, but after about 60 days, I started getting that opinion back, you know, and I was like flying to a town, you know, and I was a little tired, you know. I mean, did it ever bother anybody to walk into a bar late or if you didn't know anybody? For my case, it was usually preferred. You know? And so, I started hitting meetings all the time, you know, and I did exactly what they said. So my experience is this, folks, is that I came to, and I came to believe. You know, I believe in that old saying of meeting makers make it. Yeah, we know there's a little bit more to it, but you're going to find out about it here in the meetings if you keep coming back, you know. I've been running around some meetings lately, and they're really bashing meeting-goers. You know, they sit there, you know, meetings aren't going to keep you sober. I said, going to a bar doesn't either. I'd rather have you here. And you know what? The only place I ever hear that shit is in a meeting. And so if they don't like it, what are they doing here? If it's not going to keep you sober, you know, the door's right there. So anyway, my opinion is this. You keep coming back and have fun, okay? And so that's what I did. I kept coming to meetings and stuff, and, I started doing some stuff I wasn't supposed to. I started making amends without consulting a sponsor. That's not really good. So I ran across this gal that I dated when I was drinking, and I really made an ass out of myself. And so I wanted to make apologies and ask her out again. And she said yes. And so we started dating. And she lived in California, and I lived out in Missouri at this time. And so I'm flying out there, and of course, I scheduled my trips around, so I was laying over in L.A., so I'm flying out to L.A., and we're going to meetings and stuff. She's not in the program, I am, so I'm going to meetings at this place, and then on my days off, I just sign my name and fly back out there and spend a few more days. So I'm out there, and they're asking for newcomers, right? And I got my hand up. Any visitors from out of town? My hand's up, and they go, Tom, put your hand down. You hear more than the regulars. I said, okay, so I didn't know it was a no-no. Anyway, so I'm going to these meetings, and things are going great. And we're in this kind of tumultuous relationship. We're constantly fighting and breaking up, and I'm going to the meeting and complaining about her, you know. And old Ernie would be sitting down, and he says, Tom, work on yourself. I said, but she didn't. He's going, work on yourself. He goes, work on yourself. So I go home and make amends, and I'd say, I'm sorry, such and such. He goes, yes, you were wrong. Back to the meeting. And I'm spending this time, and we're... And then I had a bad week. We're dating about a year and a half, and I had a bad week. My home group thought it was extremely funny. On Monday, we'd lost a job I'd had for 10 years. We went on strike. On Wednesday, I got a letter from the IRS, and on Friday, she threw me out. And Chandler Lodge thought this was extremely funny. They're like, oh, man, I was having a bad week. You showed up. Keep coming back, buddy. Hey, just turn it over. Yeah, that's what you did. Turn this over. And I'm going to the meetings, and I'm coming back and all this stuff. And, you know, and all of a sudden, after 3 months, you know, they called the strike off, and I'd been replaced. And I'd like, oh, my God, and I'm feeling really bad. And, you know, people have been in there telling me, hey, you're getting hungry? Find a job, jerk. You know, they got to think. And they're telling me, hey, Harry's looking for laborers over here, and you waited tables in there. You can do it on the ground. So after they called that strike off on that Friday, I got two jobs. I got the one waiting tables from 10 o'clock at night, from 6 o'clock at night till 10, and then from 10 o'clock at night till 6 in the morning, I was working as a laborer. And I'm doing this and whatever. We're getting back together with a gal, and she's throwing me out, and I'm doing this and all this crazy stuff, and I'm going nuts. And what had happened was is that I was actually doing pretty good, and I was feeling sorry for myself, but then I'm in this meeting, and I had one of them 90-day wonders show up, you know? Hi, my name's Bob, and my life's absolutely perfect today, having worked all 12 steps in their entirety. I've never had it so good. And if you had a good program, you too could have it all. And I'm like, I was ready to deck that sucker. And I would have if you hadn't been sitting in that wheelchair. And, you know, do the legwork, right? That little brain cell I hadn't fried yet, it came flickering back on. And so, yeah, that's when I got the two jobs. And we're doing that and going along. And things started changing from there, you know. The relationship came and went. It was up and down. It was, you know, I could write a whole hour talk just on that, you know. We'd fight and break up, and then we'd get back together, and 2 weeks later we'd get that gleam in our eye and that love in our heart, and this time we're going to try harder. So we would get back together, do the same things we broke up over, just more intensely. Couldn't figure out why we broke up quicker. You know, so I had to do that, and I had to put her in the steps, you know, practice these principles of those affairs, you know. I was powerless over her, and it was making my life unmanageable. So the next time we broke up and we got that gleam in our eye and that love in our heart, we had to say, no thanks, you know. And just in case you think you're working with some spiritual speaker here today, I'm not. So I'm seeing there, after I broke up with her, I'm seeing this gal at this meeting all the time. So I kept asking her out to coffee. About 3 months later, she says, you know, you're too young for me. I said, well, you have a younger sister. And she said, yes. And she, but she's not sober yet. When she gets sober, and that's my wife. And what? So what happened was is that her sister got sober and stuff like that, and she introduced us. And then they invited me out to Vegas for a weekend. This is back when we lived in California. And I'm like, not. I'd already been there. Went with somebody I didn't see, spent money I didn't know, no more Vegas. Rented a car I didn't drive, got in a room I didn't stay in, you know, never mind. And they're like, no, no, it'll be a lot of fun. And, okay. And so pretty much we've been together ever since, you know, and it's so to tell you that. Now, for a guy whose idea of a long-term relationship with both Friday and Saturday night, we've been together 29 years, no longer than that, yeah. Yeah, 29 years. And we've been married 25. We just celebrated 25. And, you know, that was not in the picture when I got here. You know, if you make a list of all the things you want in life when you get here, you're going to cut yourself way short. It was all about cars, houses, this, that, and the other, and her, that, and yeah. That. Today I have an awesome little granddaughter. She's 3 years old almost. She'll be three in October, and just the light of my life. She calls me Papa, and we're going to have a lot of trouble together. We're going to have so much fun. And, you know, it was funny because when I started dating my wife, she had a 10-year-old and a 15-year-old, and today they're 43, and that little 10-year-old girl sat between us with a glare, and the battle was on. So she really didn't care for me at all, and then by the time she was 12 and then 13, it was like skyrocketed into trouble. And by the time she was 14 and a half, 15, it was just a nightmare. You know, she was all the local whatever stuff, tattoos, earrings, fishnets, a lot of safety pins. And you know, one day she came home and I told her mom, I said, man, she is screwed up. And then they're looking at her and said, no, she's not. She's just going through a phase. I said, no, watch. Hey, you're messed up. And she's like, no, I'm not. Any other time I say anything, she'd rip my face off. So we ended up taking her down into an adolescent care unit shop and had her tested. And, she passed with flying colors. And she decided to stay in that treatment center. So we left her there that day, and she ended up getting sober. And that was a long time ago, 27 years she celebrated. And that's incredible. But the miracle of it isn't so much that, is that, you know, as a stepfather, it's a great job if anyone sees one in the paper, accountable, responsible, no authority, you know, bring lots of spendable income and lots of patience and tolerance, right? It ended up paying for itself off when, years later, when she got engaged, she asked me to walk her down the aisle. And that was a big deal. That was a big deal. You know, and that wasn't in the picture when I got here. You know, I told you I switched careers. Didn't know anything about construction at that time. I started as a laborer at nothing an hour. Guy said, man, my 32-year-old ego wouldn't let no 28-year-old outdo me, so I'm racing all these kids. I was carrying up red iron up three flights of the Beverly Center on my first job. And we finished in really quick. And they sent all the other guys home, said, Tom, why don't you hang out and help these carpenters out with anything they need, and then sweep up and lock the door on your way out. And so I did that, and I started showing up. And then from that, I ended up getting another assistant superintendent job. And a guy on that job, you know, said, hey, how much are they paying you? I was really proud. I'd just gotten a raise to like 10 bucks an hour. And they're like, you deserve a decent living. He took me down to the union hall and signed me up as a journeyman carpenter. I said, don't they have an apprenticeship or something like that? He goes, you're too old for that shit. He goes, here, just show up, read this book, and call me if you got any questions. It was a book on carpentry. I said, listen, suit up and show up, read the book, and call your spouse. I said, do you know Bill W? He said, who? I said, never mind. And that little brain cell I hadn't fried yet come flickering back on again, you know. He said, practice these principles in all your affairs. And so that's what I started doing. I started showing up and doing that. I read the books, and I got help, and I showed up. And he goes, now what's going to happen is you're going to show up to work, and you're not going to know anything, and they're going to fire you, but it'll take them a couple of days to figure it out. And then you're going to get another job, and you'll last a little bit longer and a little bit longer, and then at the end of the year, you'll have experience. And so I show up on that first job, and I didn't know nothing, and I lasted 2 weeks, and they fired me. It wasn't even my fault, but they fired me, and they said, because I didn't know anything. And then the next job I get, I last 2 weeks, and they made me the foreman. And I'm like, but I don't know anything. Oh, God, you're so funny, too. I said, no, seriously. I was a stewardess for 10 years. Oh, that's funny. No. Long story short, I ended up running work over there for them, and I could read plans. I took drafting in high school and stuff. And so now, next thing you know, I've been pretty much running work ever since. And became that to another job to superintendent and all these things, and I've just been showing up. But I got to tell you that that's all neat and fun and all that, but the number one thing in my life has always been sobriety. And I got to tell you that Chandler there, you know, that bad week I was having, well, I ended up getting another sponsor. At that time, I got a guy named Ron C., and Ron was a commitment sponsor. And that's somebody who runs around and volunteers you for everything that opens up in AA. Hey, we need somebody to do coffee here. Hey, Tom right here, he's available. And next thing you know, it's like running bingo at this Cry Help and doing all this other stuff. And I'm like, I don't even play bingo. You know, I'm playing with my one card, and there's some gray-haired gal over here going, hitting 15 cards right until you missed one. Not even looking up, you know. And I'm doing that, and I'm volunteering for this, and he got me into some of the greatest things, which is the service. Ended up putting me in a place called Warm Springs, where I was a commitment on there for the third Sunday of every month. Somehow that turned out to be every Super Bowl, playoffs, World Series, everyone, I'd have to be on there. And I'm dragging people up there. And I did that for 7 years. I didn't know you could quit. And he didn't say you could. And ended up moving out of state. And finally, somebody else took that commitment. But man, there was times I wanted to drink so bad. And I was thinking about it. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, shit, I can't drink that. I got to do that commitment. And I drove do that, you know. And there's other times I said, well, I got to go make the coffee. And then I'll go. And I'd hear what I needed to hear in the meeting. Even if it wasn't from someone else, at least that was me hearing it in my own head, you know. Stay green if you're new here. That means you don't get too recovered around here. You know, the thing is that you have something that's progressive and terminal. And I recommend that you do this like your life depends on it. Because it does. If you don't know that, you'll find out. And sit back and watch the parade, because you'll see them come and go. It's a great circus in town right here, you know. We get the greatest show on earth, and they all come passing through here. But if you do this like your life depends on it, let me tell you, you're going to end up in places and things. I end up calling my father. I was working on another Indian casino down on the river there, and he goes, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm a project engineer on this. He goes, engineer? Don't you have to go to college for that? No, just go to AA, you know, it's really cool. And you show up, you read the books, you do what you're told, and they promote the hell out of you, you know. And let me tell you, it's one of the most valuable commodities out there is a sober, clean mind. There's not a lot of them. And I used to joke about stuff, and I don't do it. You got to watch what you say from a podium of AA. You will eat every word. So I was making fun of these guys who were coming in. I said, I like showing up early and watching all the guys fly in at the last minute with their eyes falling out, you know, and all that, and I'm having my coffee. I was late 3 times that week. So don't say that stuff from here, you know. A lot of compassion. We don't preach to anybody from any spiritual high plane up here. It's what it is that you just got to be open and honest. And I'll tell you what, I have a lot of character defects. And I've been, but I like what Chuck C. says about character defects. For me to work on a character defect is like adding water and fertilizer to a weed. Maybe a little sunshine, trying to kill it. What they do is they start growing out of all proportions. What the book says to do is that we ask God to remove these defects that stand in our way of our usefulness for him and our fellows. And let me tell you, one of the defects I have is ego and pride. Big problems with that. I don't want to be just an AA. I want to be the AA poster boy. I want to do so good, you guys are all going to love me. And that is all pride and ego. But it's proved me well in the work area, because I ain't going to let nobody outdo me. They can maybe be better, they might be smarter, but they can't outwork me. That's what one of the guys, I think it was one of the great inventors of mine used to say this. He used to say about how, you know, genius is about 10% ability and 90% perspiration, you know. That's what it is. It's about putting your effort into it. And let me tell you, there's a lot of odds they talk about in these treatment centers. Oh, 90% of you are going to get drunk. I like what it says in AA. 50% of you are going to stay sober if you do this. Another 25 may have a relapse, but come back and get it. And then the other ones are showing, I throw in my own words here, marketable improvement. And that's the truth. The ones who come and do this thing and put this number one in their life, they don't have a problem with it, you know, and you sit there. My sponsor used to say that it's easier to stay sober than to get sober. Not sure about that. I know it's easy that once they get around, if that was true, all the people that are in these rooms would be here for the long haul. But a lot of people go out with different variety of sobriety and everything else. So what I know is I have a disease that's progressive and terminal. That means 33 years later, it's bigger and better than it ever was. It doesn't say drunk or sober, it's progressive and terminal. So I gotta do more now today than I did before then. And let me tell you, in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not what you volunteer for around here, it's what you don't turn down that counts. I want to volunteer to be the guy in front, you know, but no. It's what you do in there, the cleaning the floors and sitting there and doing the coffee commitments and doing that stuff and going to those panels where you don't want to, down to Skid Row and things like that. I'll tell you what, that's been some of the best things I've ever done is the panel work. I love going to H&I stuff. That seems to be my calling. I live in Vegas, and we have a prison up there called Indian Springs. Matter of fact, I think they kept O.J. up above, across the street up there. And what I did is I had the third Friday. Somebody came up to me. I'm on my on Friday night meeting. It's a big speaker meeting, kind of like this size, but it was a speaker meeting every Friday. And a guy comes up, hey, do you want a prison commitment on Friday, the third Friday? I go, no, when do I start? You know, this is my home group. You know, you're taking me out of my home group here. And anyway, so I start doing this thing on the third Friday, and no big deal. So we're doing this thing, and I'm getting, and we had a routine going. It was pretty a lot of fun. We had a great fellowship on the way up, great meetings, and if they let us in, sometimes they locked down and wouldn't let us in, so we'd drive back. So one night, none of us can make it except for my buddy makes it for us. And so Peter's up there, and they come up, hey, we want to start a book study on Tuesday nights, and we need an outside sponsor. And Peter's like, okay, when do we start? So he calls me up and says, hey, Tom, I got this book study we're doing every night, every Tuesday on night up in prison. I said, good for you. Thank you. And I hung up. He broke his leg that week. Tom, can you push me into prison every Tuesday? Yes, I can do that. I'm like, damn. So we started pushing these guys. I'm pushing this guy in through the prison every Tuesday. That leg took over 2 years to heal. It's just not right. And so anyway, but let me tell you what happened. They got to know us up there. And we went from one or two guys a year coming out of Indian Springs and joining the community of Alcoholics Anonymous down in Las Vegas and staying around and hanging out. We went from one or two a year to one or two a month. Next thing you know, the meeting was called the Inside Straits. And so when they have the outside meeting, the Inside Straits, it's kind of fun. But we have that we have one meeting every year with these guys at the roundup. But we have like 40 or 50 guys now from that 10 years that stuck around, that are still in there, in the community, active members of society. And if you're new here, here's one of the miracles you're gonna get from working with other people. You see the lights come on in somebody else. You see it when they get it. And that makes it all worthwhile. See, a lot of people like to work on their issue and nurturing themselves and take care of it. It's not about that. It's about you help others and God helps you. I've told you a few things here about me and what it is. I have a lot of defects still. My ego's still bad. But I was telling Joe here earlier in the evening that, you know, I've been going to some meetings and I'm hearing this guy and he's doing a real good talk. And he talked about how he went to a sponsor and the sponsor said, so you went to college? He goes, yeah. And he goes, you paid for that or your dad? He goes, my dad did. He goes, oh, okay, and you graduated, right? And he goes, no, I didn't graduate. He goes, oh, so you paid him back the money, right? He's like, well, no. He goes, well, he didn't pay you to go up there and party your brains out. He paid you to go get an education. So you either go back and get the education or pay him the money back. And I'm listening to this in the audience, and I got more time than him. I said, I'm not going to let no newcomer have a better program than me. So anyway, long story short, I went back to college after a 40-year hiatus. Now, figure this math. It went from 6 classes to 16. I don't get that. But anyway, so I went back, and I got to tell you, it was kicking my tail. And but I kicked back, and I was telling one of my fears. Here's another character. I have a lot of fears, and it should be classed with stealing because it robs us of so much. I am pathetic in English. I'm dyslexic slightly. I don't know if it's ever been diagnosed right, but hey, I cannot spell grammatically. I'm terrible. I'm pathetic when it comes to that. So I didn't take the English class. I went right into the courses I had to take. And I had to learn all this stuff on the fly that they taught in the damn English class. Had I taken that. So don't let that fear do it. If it's something you're afraid of, jump in and dive in and do it. All I can tell you is that I got 2 A minuses that first two semester there, our first classes, and then I got an A minus and an A, and I've been batting 1,000 cents. And I got a 3.92 grade average, and I got 2 classes to go. And and that's all an example of Alcoholics Anonymous. You suit up, you show up, you do what's asked of you, like read the book and do the homework. Yeah, that kind of stuff really fits in there. I can tell you that. I mean, like I said, I've been married for 25 years. I got this awesome little granddaughter, and I have been overpaid. Like I said, none of this. Work-wise, it's been going good, too. Like, currently, I'm a superintendent still in construction. I work at Universal Studios, and I'm having the time of my life. My boss called me up. I was working in Hawaii on a trip because when the recession hit, I started traveling. So I've been all over the world working in construction. Saudi Arabia, Trinidad, Northwest Florida, all over California here, I was telling you, and then some other places. But he called me up. I was in Hawaii, and he goes, what are you doing? I'm over here in Hawaii. He goes, damn, I need a good superintendent. And I said, I'm willing to listen. The best part about it, they made me a great offer, and I took it. And the best part is I got more time than him. No, he's an awesome member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope next year you will have him back here to give the talk. He's a phenomenal guy. He's great to work with. Him and I are like brothers, and there isn't anything I would. My whole goal there at work is to make him look good, and if he's looking good, then they're happy with me, you know. And this is all it is. So this is how you do it. If you're new here, this is how you do it. You help others, and God helps you. Make your life none of your business. The more you pour into this, the more you're going to get. The more you put in, the more you get. And that's how this sobriety thing works. It's all about giving it away in order to keep it, in order to get it. And I have something my sponsors asked me to share a couple things that, and I'm going to sit down after that, about 10 after, or maybe a little bit quicker. But I had a real problem with this God thing when I got here. And my original Eskimo and stuff, you know, I saw him, man, I'm having this problem with God. And he goes, you think you're having a problem with God? You should see the problem he's having with you. Ha! And walked off. And I don't get this, you know. And I'm sitting there going, hey, that's not funny, you know. Da, da, da. And so I'm a science fiction kind of guy. So I'm sitting at home after the meeting and after coffee, 2 in the morning, watching the VCR. Those are the old way they used to watch movies. And I'm me and Star Wars, right? And me and Luke, we're going after the battle stars, and we're shooting them up. And all of a sudden, it said, let go, Luke, and use the Force. And I said, my God, that's his program. Today, I believe there's a negative and positive forces acting in this universe. The positive force is the loving and caring for other human beings and putting the needs of another ahead of your own. The dark side of the force is the selfishness, self-centeredness, self-seeking. When's my ship coming in? When's my turn due? And all that. But if you want a bad day, folks, just go home and start thinking. It's going to drive you right into a toilet. Yeah, I've never gone home and said, oh, gee, it's so wonderful. I've never had it so good. No, that doesn't come to my mind. So the more you put into this, the more you do it. And so I said, aha. So I started believing there, and then it's caught on from there. The other thing I can't emphasize enough is about the service. It's, you know, the first commitment I had, I was telling you about that one to Warm Springs. I was invited a bunch of my biker buddies from one of the gangs down there, Sober, I think it was Fifth Chapter, and I said, you know, they're meeting me up there, and I'm cruising along Highway 5 heading up there to Warm Springs, you know, about 10 miles over the speed limit, listening to the mellow songs along the coast. This is Coast 103, the mellow songs, and all of a sudden they had an ad come on about a new ride they put in back then at Magic Mountain called Ninja. And the ad went like this: Ninja, the black belt of roller coasters. We can't see this rack. You never know when the next turn's coming. And I go, oh my God, that's his program. You hop on this thing called sobriety, and you go on uphill, you're feeling good, and all of a sudden you're getting a few bucks in your pockets. And all of a sudden some old buddy shot you on the shoulder and said, hey buddy, read the book. He goes, shut up back there. I got a good program. Check it out. And all of a sudden she sits down, and you go, my God, what a spiritual program indeed. I just love sobriety. And all of a sudden it goes, and it's going downhill faster and faster. You go, what's going on? I go, I don't know, man. And all of a sudden it goes right, and she went left, felt like she just tore your heart out. He goes, my God, what's going on? He goes, read the book. You go, okay. And you're looking around for it, and all of a sudden there's a loop, and there goes your job out the window. But just hang in there, folks, because the line got longer and the price of the ticket went up. Just hang in there. He's going, man, what's going on? Read the book. You go, I lost it on the last turn. But hang in, man, because eventually you know it's going to smooth out and run, and then it's going to go uphill again, and it'll metal out again. And you know what's going to happen? Somebody's going to sit in front of you. You know what you'll do? You'll tap them on the shoulder and go, hey, buddy, read the book. Take the steps. Thanks for letting me share.